haughty eyes. We talked about the lying tongue, how lies can get us into trouble. We talked about hands that shed innocent blood, which was a very heavy discussion. We talked about a heart that devises wicked plans. You know, it's one thing to slip up or to accidentally sin, but it's another thing to plan out all this wickedness. Feet that are swift and running to evil, it's exciting. It's something that fulfills, or you think it fulfills you, so you run towards it. A false witness who speaks lies, which is noteworthy considering we talked about a lying tongue previously, showing this seriousness of falsehood in the eyes of the Lord. And now we come to one who sows discord among brethren. One who sows discord among brethren. That reminds me, Celeste, you weren't here on Wednesday night, but you will never believe what Carlos said about you the other night. So, how many of those did I just commit? Because I planned that to make y'all laugh. It was definitely a big time lie, so there's two of them. I'm sowing discord. That's one example right there. And of course we're laughing, we're having a good time, but it's a very serious thing that happens. The sowing of discord comes from this, I don't know, it's, you don't want to, how do I say this? You're trying to throw your brother under the bus. You recognize that we're all human. That's something we all need to realize, is we're all human. And the scripture, in New Testament scripture, gives us a means of saying, if you see your brother in sin, go to them. Don't go to other people, go to them. But sowing discord takes more forms than just seeing a brother in sin and saying, this is what so-and-so did. It's also saying that they have some sort of view of the scripture that's not true. It's also discussing them behind their back, talking about the way that they dress, even if it's appropriate, you still may criticize them for things that the world criticizes each other for. Is any of this okay? Absolutely not. Exactly. That's right. Just because it's true doesn't mean it needs to be said. If I have an issue with a brother, that's between me and him. It's not for me to drag anyone else into the problem. Absolutely. You know, opinion. That just means something I think. Something that may not necessarily even be true, but it's just from what is something I observe, or the way that the impression they give me makes me feel, that kind of deal. Didn't mean to rhyme there. Martha? Gossip's the big one. Do not gossip. It's not our place to... I'll get to you one second. It's not our place to be talking about one another in any sort of fashion. Carla, go ahead. Telephone. That game of telephone, huh? That's kind of like gossip, indeed. You say something to one person, you get the details. They take the details, and maybe they don't remember it right. And so whenever they tell somebody else, it's a little misconstrued. And then the further along it goes, the more and more misconstrued until we're making this person who's really not guilty of anything is made out to be this type of person that's just, you don't like them because of that. So yeah, gossip, that's kind of the all-encompassing thing right there that will sow discord. And cannot be speaking to one another about others behind their back. You got something? If you got a problem with your brother, this is talking about Matthew 18 here. If you got any problem with your brother, and especially if they're in sin, go to them and them alone. That's how you start off. They don't have any business. If me and you are having beef, they don't have any business. They don't have any business. Me and you got to hash it out. Matthew 18 then goes on to say, if they don't listen, this, that, and the other. But at the beginning, I got to go to the source. I got to go to one-on-one, not involve other people at all. Before class, one of the things that me and Martha were talking about was how all these things add up to this person, like the person we read about in verses 12 through 15. They are using their whole body for sin. A proud look, eyes, a lying tongue, hands that shed innocent blood, a heart that devises wicked plans, feet that are swift to run into evil, false witness who speaks lies, the breath that we speak, and then one who sows discord among brethren. That is something that takes everything. I tap you on your shoulder with this plan in my heart to turn you against someone else. These six things the Lord hates. Yes, seven are an abomination to him. And aren't any of these worse than the others? No, they are all. These are all things, first of all, that the Lord hates and sees as abominations. And so to treat one as lesser than the other, that's not right. Because when we look at a lying tongue, that includes the little white lies, those small things that others may see as not as bad, not as terrible as hands that shed innocent blood. And the eyes of the Lord, they're all the same. Every one of these is sin in the eyes of God. Every one of these in verses 16 through 19 is abominable and the Lord hates. God doesn't want us involved in any of them just because the world, society wants to say, this lie isn't so bad. Or thinking evil things in my heart isn't so bad. Or it's not so bad if I tell this person about what terrible thing they did to me. All sin meets the same eternal fate in the end. Any other thoughts or comments regarding these abominations, the things the Lord hates, or the worthless man in the previous verses? All right, from verse 20 to the end of the chapter, all deals with one subject, that being adultery. And Solomon warning his son not to be involved with adultery and harlotry. From verses 20 through 29, we will start there. It says, "My son, keep your father's command and do not forsake the law of your mother. Bind them continually upon your heart, tie them around your neck. When you roam, they will lead you. When you sleep, they will keep you. When you awake, they will speak with you. For the commandment is a lamp, and the law a light. Reproofs of instruction are the way of life, to keep you from the evil woman, from the flattering tongue of a seductress. Do not lust after her beauty in your heart, nor let her allure you with her eyelids. For by means of a harlot a man is reduced to a crust of bread, and an adulteress will prey upon his precious life. Can a man take fire to his bosom and his clothes not be burned? Can one walk on hot coals and his feet not be seared? So is he who goes in to his neighbor's wife. Whoever touches her shall not be innocent." So, to break this down, we get verses 20 through 23 where he says, "My son, keep your father's command. Do not forsake the law of your mother. Bind them continually on your heart. Tie them around your neck. When you roam, they will lead you. When you sleep, they will keep you. When you awake, they will speak with you. For the commandment is a lamp, and the law a light. Reproofs of instruction are the way of life." As he has done in every chapter, he has reminded his son once again to keep his commands, the commandments of both himself and of his mother. Continuously holding these things close to him, reminding him of the reward of guidance wherever he goes, peace in his sleep, a light in the darkness, reminding him that these commands are instructions that will help him throughout his life as long as he acts upon them. And these are all being repeated as he leads up to writing once again about immorality, following after the evil woman and committing adultery with her. It says, verse 24 and 25, "To keep you from the evil woman, from the flattering tongue of a seductress. Do not lust after her beauty in your heart, nor let her allure you with her eyelids." So first off, he recounts the flattering tongue of the seductress, saying that these instructions he's giving will keep you from her and her flattering tongue. We talked about this in chapter 2 and chapter 5. What does she use flattery for? Deceit? To lure? To gain? To gain? She uses flattery to use you, get her way, and once she's done using you, drops you like a bad habit. At this point, we may be wondering, why would anyone want to pursue this type of person? Well, it ties into the other warning Solomon gives here. And what was that warning? Do not lust after her beauty. Do not be allured by her eyelids. Do not be allured by her eyelids. Why eyelids? Bat your eyes at somebody. Yep. There's power in these eyes. Unexpected power. Sometimes you think you're looking at somebody normally, you may come across to them as someone that's eyeballing them, so to speak. I remember I once was dating a girl that whenever I looked at her like this, I don't know why, but that drove her crazy. But the thing about that was, it was my, did you really just say that? That's a joke, right? Face. I don't know. Again, that's unexpected. But the fact of the matter is, once again, there's power in the eyes. Ladies, how many different kinds of eye makeup are there? Lots. Somebody in the makeup industry knows what they're doing. Eyes get attention. And I'm not trying to be anti-makeup at all. Don't get me wrong here. But seriously, eyes get attention. They're the windows to the soul. So, and if a moral person uses that to their advantage, not just with their makeup, but with the seductive looks, with the batting of the eyes, that can add to a person's beauty or aura. And you know how many problems come up with the issue of beauty? A whole mess. That's why we talked last chapter about being committed to the spouse that you marry. That no other person should even be regarded in the same vein as the person you marry. Not your ex, not your coworker, not anyone. True beauty is not in the looks. It's about personality. It's about loyalty. It's about godliness above all else. Looks are fine and all, and it's good to be physically attracted to your spouse. But if looks is all you go off of, then you'll be in serious trouble. Because what's their personality like? Are they kind, caring, loving? Or are they rude, uncaring, and hateful? Are they hardworking or lazy, like we talked about previously in the chapter? Do you share interests and hobbies, or are they going to spend all their time away from you? Are they loyal? Do they focus on you, or are you just a placeholder for them? Are they godly? Do they focus on being well-pleasing to God and have a relationship built on godly principles? Or are they going to act as a stumbling block in your walk with God because they are without faith or do not take the faith seriously? All these things are vital to choosing the lifelong spouse. But if looks is all you care about, everything else we just mentioned becomes null and void. And your mindset, if it is focused solely on how a person looks, anything goes. Even if you're married and you meet someone that you think is physically more beautiful than your spouse, if your mindset is focused on how a person looks, then you're going to risk it. Focusing on looks alone is a bad mentality to have. And so, as Solomon continues, verses 26 to 29, "For by means of a harlot, a man is reduced to a crust of bread, and an adulteress will prey upon his precious life. Can a man take fire to his bosom and his clothes not be burned? Can one walk on hot coals and his feet not be seared? So is he who goes into his neighbor's wife. Whoever touches her shall not be innocent." What do we see here as the end result of the man who pursues the harlot? Forever be changed. It says in the scripture, he is reduced to a crust of bread. There's nothing left of him, at least not anything desirable. He's the crumble falling off the toasted bread. He is the crust left behind after you pull out the knife and cut off the crust so you only have the white part for your sandwich. He is reduced to this. Reduced. That's a powerful word here. That means before he pursued immorality, before he pursued the harlot, he had redeeming qualities. He was someone that was going somewhere. He was someone with a good future ahead of him. But all of that was gone after he was used up by the immoral person. All was left after immorality and being used up. All that was left behind of him, an empty shell of what once was. So what comparison does Solomon make here? Which is ironic because today we're going to be talking about Daniel chapter 3, where three men literally get thrown into a fiery furnace and don't get burned. But the irony aside there, they were not burned because they were loyal to God. And being what we see here is Solomon is essentially saying, you're playing with fire. And there is no way that you're going to go into your neighbor's wife. There is no way that you are going to pursue immorality, adultery, harlotry, and not get harmed. And not harm somebody else in the process. Whoever touches his neighbor's wife will not be innocent. As they say, it takes two to tango. Got to be mindful. Both sides have to be mindful of what they're looking at, what they're putting on, and how that is affecting one another. And I like what you said there about, you know, I've heard that argument before about ladies saying, you know, could wear whatever they want because the men shouldn't be looking. And I agree that the men shouldn't be looking, but also, and I'm going to say, let me rephrase that. Nobody should be looking at the opposite sex with lust in their heart, men or women. And men or women, we shouldn't be giving them anything to look at. And I say men and women because that is something men can be guilty of too. I know we typically pick on the way the women dress, and especially in today's society, good grief, some of the things young ladies are wearing these days is mind-boggling. Okay. They're not all young, she said. Anyway, the point is, I think about the verse. I'm going off the top of my head, so bear with me. But Paul talks about, I believe it's in the letter in 1 Corinthians, where he talks about the eating of meats and how that can cause a stumbling block for those lesser in the faith because they are coming out of idolatry. They're coming out of this, what they know as, and now see because they're Christians, as this terrible thing because this is meat offered to idols, sort of a thing. And so Paul says, you know, if it comes down to it, I'm paraphrasing here, if it comes down to it, I won't eat meat ever again if it means that it helps the brother. Maybe I'm wrong, but the same line of thinking applies here in the fact that if something that I'm wearing, that's something that I'm doing, putting on my body, look, the way I look at a person gives this impression that I'm lusting after them. Or what I'm putting on and what I'm doing is causing them to lust after me. I need to correct that. Again, it takes two to tango. So, ladies, gentlemen, both need to be mindful of one another and not be willing to open doors to lustful thinking and down the line, lustful actions. Yes, Andre. You, brother, and in this day and age, you know, like we said, people are dressing, it's becoming more socially acceptable to dress more and more provocatively, and we all need to have the proper discernment of mind that, you know, it they come and they get in our way, we see it, I ain't looking at that no more. We gotta have the discernment, the self-control to be able to look away in a moment's notice. Something pops up on your screen when you're scrolling the internet. Yo! Nope. Turn it off right now. That's what we got to do. Absolutely. Andre, to that point, it's like we said, becoming more of the norm to wear these provocative showing outfits. And you know, it's like we said, it's about respect within the relationship. You respect so you don't look, you respect so you don't dress the type of way, and that goes both sides. You know, I've seen too many times, you know, you're mowing the lawn, you're minding your own business, fine. But wear a shirt, gentlemen. I cannot tell you how many times I've seen people just, men, no shirt, mowing the lawn. You're in the privacy of your yard, whatever. But it's your front yard, so everybody's seeing that. Anyway, the point is, that respect of not looking and not giving others to look at. And to your point, Regina, back in the previous chapter, that's something Solomon also said to his son, to be content with the wife of your youth. Be content with the person you are married to. Let them satisfy you. Let their beauty enrapture you. Not the beauty of another person. Not the beauty of somebody you pass by in the street or in the store that's wearing provocative outfits or that's looking at you a certain type of way. No. And even if you are not in a marriage relationship, but want to be in a marriage relationship, you got to prepare for that marriage relationship by adopting both of those attitudes. Yep, I agree. All right. The chapter ends with verses 30 through 35, continuing with the thought of immorality and concludes with the idea of facing the fury of the jealous husband. Solomon says, verse 30 beginning, "People do not despise a thief if he steals to satisfy himself when he is starving. Yet when he is found, he must restore sevenfold. He may have to give up all the substance of his house. Whoever commits adultery with a woman lacks understanding. He who does so destroys his own soul. Wounds and dishonor he will get, and his reproach will not be wiped away. For jealousy is the husband's fury. Therefore, he will not spare in the day of vengeance. He will accept no recompense, nor will he be appeased, though you give many gifts." So it starts off, people do not despise a thief if he steals to satisfy himself when he is starving. Yet when he is found, he must restore sevenfold. He may have to give up the substance of his house. Continuing this thought about how bad getting involved in adultery and immorality is. He's saying even a thief can be more forgiven. He may steal from you. He may take all that you have. But if he's, you know, starving, it's a little more understandable. He's still got to answer for it. He still has to restore sevenfold. May even have to give up his own house. But then, Solomon says, whoever commits adultery with a woman lacks understanding. He who does so destroys his own soul. Wounds, dishonor, reproach will not be wiped away. Jealousy is a husband's fury. He will not spare in the day of vengeance. He will accept no recompense, nor will he be appeased with many gifts. How is he who commits adultery lacking in understanding? He doesn't realize he's destroying himself and ruining his life. That's a good point. You know, there is no line of thinking in the realm of one pursuing adultery that sounds any at all decent. They're acting on fleshly desire, making decisions based on fleshly sexual motivation. And they're going against the better judgment. There's probably all these things going off in their head saying, this is a very, very bad idea. We should not be doing this. And yet they ignore it. I mean, seriously, you cannot go down this path without completely ignoring better judgment. You go down this path, all the alarms should be going off. She's not my wife. She's my friend's wife. All these bad things could happen. My reputation, my finances, my very life is on the line if I could do this. I'm ruining this relationship that's been established with two other people that I have no part of. As Solomon says, he lacks understanding. In the moment of pursuing fleshly and sexual lusts, he's not concerned with all of that. He's concerned with, she's good looking. Let me have her. Yes, ma'am. Losing focus. Yep. What are we supposed to be focused on? We're supposed to be focused on our spouse. We're supposed to be focused, if you're single, you're supposed to be focused on preparing for your spouse. And so what can he who commits adultery expect to have happen to him? Lose everything, including his soul. It says in the scripture, he destroys his own soul. That's the first thing that's mentioned here. He destroys his own soul. Remember, that's what's going back to God. That's what is going to stand before Jesus on the day of judgment and answer for the things that he's done in the body. And then Solomon shows the earthly consequences. Wounds and dishonor. His reproach will not be wiped away. He will gain the reputation of someone who goes and sleeps with his friend's wife. Wounds and dishonor. His reputation tarnished. He will be looked at as someone untrustworthy, a worthless lowlife. His reproach will not be wiped away. He will always be seen as this adulterous person. The husband will not spare in the day of vengeance. Think about that. Adultery harms everybody involved, but you could argue that the person that is harmed the most is the innocent person. They think that their relationship is fine. Maybe there's some problems here and there, but stuff we're working through. Then he comes home one night to find his friend with his wife romantically. That will break that person. That trust with the wife, that trust with the friend. Celeste and then Cindy. Absolutely right. That's a good point too. You know, the children that come, they wake up one morning and they find that their dad is gone or their mom is gone. And why? Because they walked in on their significant other cheating on them. Those poor children, they got to live with this, knowing that their mom or their dad were involved with this mess. Oh, of course not. That's right. Whew. Yeah. All right. Hundreds. Yep. But it's something I wonder the timeline of. We're not exactly given the timeline of when these proverbs were written. In my mind, it seems like they were written afterward. I don't know. Don't take that as gospel. Don't take that with a grain of salt, because I've heard it the other way too, that these proverbs were all beforehand. But we're out of time. Very good discussion. We will begin with our questions for chapter 6 Wednesday night. Thank you all for your comments.